This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing what we usually do every year, and we've done it a number of years, year-end tax reduction tips for 2014 tax returns. We are also something new that I thought would be that you would like, those of you who are listening to the program live. We have a CPA, Call a CPA Night also. And so if you're listening to us live, I think you have heard the number. I'll give it again as we progress into the program. And then also I'll invite you to call in and ask your question, make a comment on the air. My guests, I have two tax law specialists, David Hellman, whose office is in Marin County, Jason Gallick, whose office is in San Francisco. They're certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. My third guest, and I want to get this correct, is Sarah Drinkwater. Sarah is the supervising attorney of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic for the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Hopefully I did it right, huh, Sarah?
You did a great job.
Okay. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of specialization, not only taxation law, but appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding for this program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. We have a number of things that we'd like to let you know about. One of them that I think is particularly important throughout the state, and I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with this, and that is that people are getting calls from the, supposedly from the IRS, telling them that this, that, and the other, and it is a phone scam. They are targeting low-income people. They're targeting seniors. Could you, the three of you, talk a little bit about this, because I think this is very important. Let me start with you, Jason, please.
Sure. This is a problem that's been happening for a while. IRS has been warning taxpayers about these phone scams. They have alerts that they issue every once in a while. Recently, the last few months, there's been an upsurge in Bay Area of this type of phone scam. And one of the things that you'll hear if someone's calling you with one of these scams is you have to immediately give over some confidential information like your Social Security number, or you need to make a payment immediately or face arrest or something like that based on some tax liability that you may that they say that you have. And you probably would be surprised by that because you probably are hearing for the first time. The IRS, however, will never do that over the phone. If they're going to make a demand for payment because you owe something, it's going to be through the mail and most likely certified mail.
So what do you do if you get a call from someone who's identifying him or herself as being in, being connected with the IRS? Would it be wise to try to get a phone number from this person if you are being called by this person? Say, well, may I have your phone number? And if this person gives it to you, then doing research, either Googling or finding out in your community what where the local IRS office is and call the local IRS office and tell them, I've been called by this person. I know it's a scam. Here's the phone number they gave. Sarah, what do you think?
I think that's a great idea. So if you're getting contacted out of the blue by someone who is making threatening comments to you about a tax debt that you believe you owe or don't owe, you should get their phone number so you can report it to the IRS so they can track these folks. And then call the IRS. If you're concerned that maybe you have a tax debt out there, call the IRS directly. Don't use the phone number that they've given you, because a lot of times what's happening is that they're very professional. They have this mimic system where you return the call, and it sounds very much like it's an IRS call center. They even have a process where it sounds like in the background there are other folks talking, like a call center giving information. So if you're concerned about this, hang up, call the IRS. You can go to irs.gov. You can get your local taxpayer advocate office phone number or just the 1-800 number to find out the status of your account.
So, in other words, if you get called supposedly by someone from the IRS, this is a scam. This is a scam. David, you and I have done this many years. And what thoughts do you have for people? I mean, the whole focus of this program was try to talk about some things that might be tips for trying to reduce your taxes before the end of this year. In other words, not wait until next year to start thinking about it, but maybe there are things that can be done this year. What's the basic message you'd like to relate to people?
Well, they need to plan and get their documents ready. You cannot do effective planning unless you have the information available to work on either yourself or with a professional who might be able to give you some advice. So you need to get your records in order, have summarizations of the various items of income and deduction. If you're self-employed and have your own business, you need to have current financial statements so that you can know what information there is for income and deductions, as well as assets that are on the balance sheet that may be new assets that are going to be depreciable, or maybe you're thinking about buying something. So the first step in all of it is to get your documents and information together so that effective planning can be done.
And what if you're trying to somehow want to reduce your tax liabilities? What are the basic things, Jason, that people should be thinking about if there is a way of trying to reduce your taxes by doing some decent planning this year before January 1st of next year?
Sure. Well, all individuals are going to be cash method taxpayers. So what that means is you're not going to have income until you receive the income, and you're not going to have a deduction until you've incurred that expense or whatever gave rise to that. So if you can time when you receive your income or when you can claim a deduction, you can either accelerate or defer when you recognize those items of income or deduction.
What if someone has a mortgage and they have a monthly payment that they have to make, and the mortgage obviously would include some interest, it would include some principal. What if someone is thinking about, well, gee, maybe I can get a benefit by before the end of the year, maybe I can pay the mortgage payment that's due in January in December. Does that work?
You can accelerate if you pay in advance, and yes, that should work. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to incur a deductible interest expense and you pay an extra payment, then that should be something that will allow you to accelerate that deduction.
In that area, David, what thoughts do you have about that?
Well, yes, on that specifically, you can prepay the 1 month. In terms of the other items, I would agree with what Jason's talking about. You look and see whether, for instance, if you're in your own business and it's a function of when you bill customers as to when you're going to receive the funds, then you could, if you want to accelerate the income, well, you want to make sure you get the bills out as fast as you can. If you want to defer the income, well, then maybe you don't bill them until early January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Similarly, for expenses, if you want to increase your expenses, well, make sure that all of your accounts payable are paid timely before the end of the year. On the other hand, if you want to bolster your income and you can defer some of those payments of expenses until January, well, then don't pay those bills until January.
Why would you want to bolster your income, though, David? What would be the point of doing that?
Well, if you see that this is a fairly low income year and you really know that next year is going to be much better.
I see.
Then a general rule in taxation is that if your income is generally fairly flat or equal from year to year, over the long run you will pay less in taxes than if there are a lot of spikes up and down.
I see. Okay.
Because you're in one flat general area of range, and that tends to be a better philosophy of tax planning.
Let's take a little break right now. It is our Call a CPA night. We have three CPAs here, and the number is 1-800-525-9917, who are here to do you a good service. They are members of the California Society of CPAs, Stephen Graves, Evan Stevens, and Larry Pond. There's no obligation on your part whatsoever, but you're welcome to call in 1-800-525-9917 and talk with them. And in case you're looking for a CPA, their website, the CPAs Society of California Society of CPAs website is www.calcpa.org. www.calcpa.org. The society has been assisting in my program usually just before tax time, and we decided that we would try to do a greater favor to you by having them come again toward the end of the year, which is obviously tonight. So take advantage of it. If you would like to talk to my guests on the air, that's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our year-end tax tips for 2014 tax returns. My guests on the air, on the air, come on, let's get it out here, are certified specialists in taxation, David Hellman and Jason Gallick. My third guest is Sarah Drinkwater. She's a supervising attorney in the center called Justice and Diversity Center, and she supervises the low-income taxpayer clinic of the Bar Association of San Francisco through the Justice and Diversity Center. Briefly outline, what is that all about, and how does someone, obviously, I presume, I don't know if it covers just San Francisco or the entire Bay Area. Give us a little breakdown on that, would you?
Sure. So the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic provides free services to taxpayers who are in what we call controversy with the IRS. And controversy just means that either you owe the IRS or you believe the IRS owes you, and there's a dispute about how to get to the end of that. We deal with everything from straight-up collection, that first time you get a notice from the IRS that you owe a debt, all the way through tax court litigation. We have a case pending in the Ninth Circuit right now, so we cover the whole range of controversy with the IRS.
Who geographically is entitled to seek the help of your office?
So we are open to just about anyone.
Really?
That's right. So we say that anyone who could choose San Francisco as a place of tax court trial could take advantage of our program, but anyone can do that. So we have clients as far away as Oregon and Nevada.
That's incredible.
Our requirements for services for our clinic are that you are eligible based on, one, on income. Mm-hmm. So we serve low-income folks. Mm-hmm. And then that you have an actual controversy. So we don't do things like prepare a current year tax return, but if you owe for previous years or you have an innocent spouse claim, things like that, we can assist with.
Well, that's very interesting. What about this? Jason, before we started the program, you mentioned something to me about for employers. They might have an insurance plan that is non-compliant. What does that mean, and of what significance is that to, let's say, the small employer?
Sure. Well, as of 2014, there's some changes in health care plans, obviously. And some plans that were in effect before may not be compliant. And I've seen a situation where an employer who did not realize and did not check to see if their employment or their benefits plan was consistent or compliant with the recent changes found themselves in
violation. These are federal changes, are they not?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So they realized that part of their benefits plan was not compliant, and they were worried about a potential penalty. Mm-hmm. And the penalty is pretty steep. It's $100 per employee per day. So if you're an employer and you haven't checked to see if you're compliant as of 2014, because there have been several changes that have been happening in the last few years, you should certainly ask somebody to see if you're still doing things correctly.
Who do you suggest they should ask?
I would suggest an ERISA attorney. generally.
ARISA.
Yes.
Why is that?
They deal with these types of issues almost exclusively. So they would be able to help a taxpayer or employer figure out whether or not their plans are...
How does one find an ERISA attorney?
There are quite a few different types of tax attorneys.
Yes.
So ERISA is one of the big distinctions between controversy is one category, mm-hmm. state and local
tax. But how do you find ERISA? Google ERISA?
You can just Google ERISA tax attorney.
For your geographic area?
Yeah. There's not really going to be any other distinction. Mostly a self-applied.
All right. Okay. All right. What about... I know that there, in the past, there's been something about making charitable contributions using your IRAs. David, what's that all about, and what suggestions do you have?
Okay, well, up through 2013, the last couple of years, if you were 70 and a half and you wanted to make a charitable contribution, you could do it through your IRA, and then it would become part of your required minimum distribution, so you wouldn't have to take it again. And then that amount would not be added into your income, but you also would not get a deduction for it.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit of it in that regard is that it keeps your adjusted gross income lower, which the adjusted gross income figure is used to calculate how much medical deductions you can take, how much miscellaneous itemized deductions you can take, and it also impacts whether the overall itemized deductions are going to be reduced by a percentage because of the amount of your income. So this year, in 2014, it has not been extended. There has been discussion in Washington about extending it. Whether it happens before the end of the year or into next year, it may. But there's really no harm in making that distribution out of your IRA to the charity directly. If Congress does make something retroactive, then you've got the benefit of it working that way. If they do not, well, you would end up picking up the amount as a required minimum, part of your required minimum distribution or all of it, and you'd then get the charitable deduction. So it's it's a no-lose situation as far as making that kind of a distribution, but you do have to be 70 and a half.
Okay. All right. 70 and a half or older.
Or older.
Okay. All right.
At least 70 and a half.
One of the things that we talked about before we take a call from any of the listeners who would like to talk with you is preparer fraud. Apparently, I wonder, Sarah, if you talk a little bit about that, because that's something that I think people need to be aware of throughout the state. Where this program is provided, whether you're listening live in the Bay Area or live on the Internet at www.kalw.org, we are talking focusing to you throughout California. So, Sarah, what thoughts do you have on this?
Yes, excuse me. So, preparer fraud has been going on for quite a while. One of the common schemes that we're seeing is that tax preparers are... preparing a tax return for a taxpayer. They provide the taxpayer a copy of the return, the payer signs off on it, and let's say the preparer says, okay, you're going to get a $2,000 refund. A couple months later, sure enough, $2,000 refund shows up and the taxpayer thinks everything's good. But what's been happening is that some of these preparers, because you can divert your refund into several or two different accounts, they will create a separate return, mm-hmm. the one that's actually submitted to the IRS, where they claim a $4,000 refund. And you, the taxpayer, get a $2,000 refund. You think everything's fine. But in fact, a $4,000 refund has been issued, $2,000 of it going to your preparer. 2 years later, the IRS comes knocking on your door saying, hey, you know, you incorrectly took a credit. We overpaid your refund and you owe us money and penalties and interest, and the preparer's long gone, and now the taxpayer is on the hook for it. So, you know, some of the red flags we see with unscrupulous preparers are, if one, you're not given a copy of your refund, you should, mm-hmm. or I'm sorry,
your return.
Your return.
Okay.
So you should always be getting... your actual return, look it over carefully, because you, the taxpayer, are the one who's legally liable for any tax arising out of it. If you're dealing with a preparer who just asks for documents and have you sign something without ever seeing a return, that should be a red flag. Mm-hmm. When
you talk about preparer, I mean, are you saying that there are some CPAs, for example, who may be members of the California Society of CPAs who may be doing this? Or are you talking about some other kind of person?
The scams I'm aware of, they tend to be more just a preparer, someone who's not necessarily a CPA or an enrolled agent.
Yes.
In California, a tax preparer, which is someone who prepares your returns for a fee, they're required under California law to be registered with the California Tax Education Council. So if you're wondering about your preparer, you can always go to the California Tax Education Council and look your preparer up. And that might be a good way to determine whether this person, one, has gone through the requisite training, and two, is someone, at least at a base level, that you can rely on for getting those prepares done or those returns done.
Okay. All right. I want to, again, let you know, this is our call, a CPA night, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, in cooperation with the California Society of CPAs, www.calcpa.org. And the CPAs here are Larry Pond, Evan Stevens, and Stephen Graves. This is a public service that they are performing for your benefit. Take advantage of it if you have tax questions, tax concerns, need some information. No obligation on your part whatsoever. 1-800-525-9917. And if you'd like to talk to my guests, we're about to take some calls on the air. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing our annual tax tips for the tax return. And this year, of course, 2014. My guests are Sarah Drinkwater, Jason Gallick, and David Hellman. And we're going to start right now with Mark. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
For doing the call. So, two-part question, depreciation and then some donation questions. So, San Francisco resident held a out-of-state investment property for 7 years, a modest property, sold it this summer, made a very small profit, and through the life of this asset, I actually had some small losses, so I was writing those off along with mortgage interest, et cetera, and depreciating it. I was very surprised upon selling it to learn from my tax person that I was actually going, I'm looking at a sizable capital gains tax bill in 2015 because of this depreciation changing the cost basis. And so now this, you know, less than $10,000 profit I made on the sale is going to be looked at by the IRS, if I understand her correctly, at almost 3 to 4X that amount. So I just wanted to get clarity on that type of, I guess, if you will, recalculated additive depreciation.
Mark, where is your tax preparer?
My tax preparer actually lives up in Petaluma.
Up in Petaluma. Is this a CPA?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me get some comments. One of the things that I want to make sure you understand is my guests are not permitted by the State Bar of California to give specific legal advice. But I'm going to ask them to more generally try to give you some direction of what you might do. And what you are saying is in that you took depreciation on this property, you are now, you believe, facing a tax liability to the IRS of something like $30,000 to $40,000. Is that right?
Yes. Well, that will be the taxable. That around that amount will be subjected to, and also it sounded like not just one capital gains, but a couple of taxes.
Well, let me get some comments for
sure.
You. Try to give you some direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling, David. What thoughts do you have for Mark?
Okay. Well, the first thing I think your CPA is right. When you depreciate property, it decreases your income tax basis in the asset. So if you paid $100,000 for a piece of property and you have taken $20,000 worth of depreciation, your new income tax basis is $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the gain is measured against, not the $100,000 that you originally paid.
Yeah.
So that's correct there. And as far as the types of taxes that he may be subject to, there is a possibility if there was accelerated depreciation that part of the depreciation would be recaptured at for federal purposes at 25%. If there is none of that, or to the extent there is, the balance would be subject to federal capital, assuming, well, he's talked about it, holding it for years, so it would be long-term capital gain.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it would be potentially taxed at 0% capital gains rate if his overall income bracket is not higher than 25%. And part of it could be taxed at 20%. In addition to that, there is this new investment tax that helps fund the Affordable Care Act, and that is a 3.8% tax. Your threshold depends on whether you're married or single, but it's basically investment income when your overall income is either, for a single person, over $200,000, or married couple, $250,000. So that's the federal, and then California is going to just tax all of this as ordinary income. So it can be where the overall tax bite could get up into the 40% bracket.
Wow.
Potentially for these kinds of things with a large capital gain. From what he was describing, it sounds like it's a smaller level, but you still could be looking at 33 to 35% overall tax, depending upon his other income.
Yeah, you know, what I am thinking as you talk, David, is that in that Mark has obviously been incredibly surprised by this. His CPA is up in Petaluma. My guts are telling me it might make sense for Mark to get a second opinion, whether it's going to call the Board of Legal Specialization for a taxation certified specialist or contact another CPA. What thoughts do you have, David, on what steps Mark might make?
It never hurts to get the second opinion. Just to make sure that he hasn't missed something given to the CPA and that the CPA hasn't misinterpreted something. So I would agree. Get another opinion and see whether all of the information is out there and has been given correct advice.
Jason, do you have any further comments for Mark on this?
No, I think David gave an excellent overview of that.
Okay. So. What we're going to do, we've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live both in the Bay Area as well as on the Internet at www.klw.org. For those of you who listen to the program live, you'll be able to call in and talk with my guests. All right. It is right now 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. We are doing a Call a CPA night. I don't know how active the CPAs are on the phone, Martin. Can you tell if they're busy on the phone or not? And that number is 1-800-525-9917. Please, if you have a tax question, a tax concern, a tax problem, please take advantage of this. The whole point of this, in spite of the fact that this is the second night of the World Series, I have designed this to try to be of some benefit to you in cooperation with the California Society of CPAs, www.calcpa.org. We have Stephen Graves, Evan Stevens, and Larry Pond here if you'd like to talk with them off the air. No obligation on your part whatsoever. They're here to do you a service. 1-800-525-9917. If you'd like to talk with my guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And my guests are very knowledgeable people about what taxes are all about. Sarah Drinkwater is a supervising attorney of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic of the Bar Association of San Francisco under the Justice and Diversity Center. I also have two certified specialists in taxation, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and they are Jason Gallick and David Hellman. So take advantage of the fact that they are here and they would like to be of help to you. Tim, welcome to the program.
thank you for taking my call. I hope I have a simple question. It concerns probate, and it concerns, well, let me just lay it out real quick. I'm a 50% beneficiary in the estate of two friends of mine that passed away from cancer almost 5 years ago. And the attorney for the executor in the matter is dragging his feet in terms of providing my attorney any information about the filing of taxes and the pursuit of tax information for both state and federal liability issues. What, as a rule of thumb, what is a reasonable period of time for a relatively simple estate? We're talking $600,000-$700,000, stocks and bonds in a small house in the Contra Costa Hills.
So
what's
this is
what's a reasonable period of time to demand some sort of accountability?
So Tim, this is a probate in Superior Court. Is that correct?
Correct.
It's not. It's not a trust situation, or is it?
The house is in a trust, but the stocks and bonds were not in a trust.
Okay, all right. Let me get some comments. Stay on the line for a minute in case there are any questions. What comments, Jason, would you have on this?
Well, I don't think there's any set amount of time for how long a probate will take, but I think very roughly it would take, I would say, between 6 months and a year, unless there's something extraordinarily unusual about it, but it should take within that ballpark.
What comments do you have, though, about the attorney who obviously is dealing with the executor not communicating with Tim's attorney?
Well, that's if it's in probate and they're worried about taxes, then that's the fiduciary of the executor has a duty to make sure that those taxes are paid, and they'll need to make sure that those are done on behalf of the beneficiaries or the heirs. So if there's any tax problems, the fiduciary is going to be responsible. So,
David, what comments do you have for Tim?
Yeah, well, I would say that certainly 2 years is probably the outside time frame in this whole thing, and that he should be entitled to get copies of the tax returns as part of an accounting. Ultimately, the executor has to file an accounting with the court. He has the option, his attorney has the option of going in and having the judge push on this and demanding that an accounting be filed. Normally, most counties are pretty good about forcing reporting of something within a year or so after the commencement of the probate. They sort of calendar it and say, all right, you either file a petition to close it or give us a report, which is essentially an accounting up to that point. So it is possible that the attorney could file a motion to compel that accounting at this point.
You might, Tim, get back to your attorney and discuss with your attorney what the comments.
Okay. I appreciate the commentary.
Yeah,
have a good evening. All right,
good,
bye.
Tim. Thanks very much for calling.
Welcome.
Karen, welcome to the program. Bear with me just a minute. I want to remind people that we are having Call a CPA Night, 1-800-525-9917, if you want to talk to any one of the three CPAs who are here, members of the California Society of CPAs. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. A couple of questions, one quick. Renter's credit, what is that? Is it still in effect? How is it established? And does it appear on your form, your tax form, as a category?
Renter's credit. Who might respond to that?
Well, I can.
Can you? Okay, David.
Yeah. It's a California credit, and it still exists. It's Schedule H, I believe, on California.
It's Schedule what?
I think H.
H as in
happy, right?
Okay.
But it's income limited. So if you have an income, and I think the threshold is around $50,000, you're going to lose. You're not going to be able to get the credit. The concept of the credit was to help give renters the same benefit that homeowners have through the property tax exemption.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
So in other words, is that gross or net?
It's gross.
Okay, so if you're more than $50,000, you're not entitled to the renter's credit.
It's in that range, and it depends on your marital circumstances. Look at the form, and it'll tell you if you work your way through it.
Okay, and then another question. So I believe that I am in a 37% tax bracket, and I make a little bit over $50,000 as a single proprietorship business.
That sounds
that seems
much
too
high.
Unbelievably high to me.
Yeah, you wouldn't be in a 37% income tax bracket, but but it may include your self-employment taxes. Because if you remember that your income tax is not the only tax you pay as a self-employed person, you also pay 15.3% of your income, subject to some credits, for Social Security and Medicare taxes. So it's the FICA and the Medicare. So that could be where you're talking about.
I see.
And
then you also have
to add in California.
Right, that's what I think it is, yeah.
Okay, Karen.
Okay, thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. 1-415-841-4134 if you'd like to talk with my guests on the air. If you'd like to talk with any of the CPAs off the air, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And by the way, I want to let you know, we are doing a Call a Lawyer night next week. So we will have attorneys in the conference room who will have a variety of areas of law that they are very familiar with that you can call in. So that same number, 1-800-525-9917. And we'll be doing an area of employment law on the air next week. So you might want to keep that in mind. Let's see. We've got Luis. Luis, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Of course.
It's a quick question. It's about IRS. I am a sole proprietorship, a small business, and I open an IRA, and what I read is you can take off your top of your taxes the amount you put in the IRA. And my CPA says, no, only one portion goes. Could you clarify that to me? But I don't have it very clear.
So how much have you invested in your IRA? Can you tell us that?
I put $4,500.
Okay, all right.
And it's the first time I am doing this, and I'm 63. I'm trying to put money in, but my CPA says, no, you have to deduct only one portion of that.
Luis, let me get some comments for you. Turn your radio back up, would you?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. David, let's start with you. What thoughts, please?
Okay, well, there are limits on how much you can put in your IRA. It's the lower of the actual income of your business, or in his instance, it would probably be $6,500, I think, is where we're at. So he could do that. There are different kinds of IRAs. There are SEP IRAs, which are calculated on a different percentage, normally 25% of the net profit. So it depends on the plan, but it sounds like he has a basic IRA.
And so he's very confused about how much of this will reduce, let's say, his gross income. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Right. Well, what it does is it's a deduction that shows up on page one of your Form 1040 below the line that talks about total income, but then you've got the adjustments to income, and it's part of those adjustments, so it's a reduction of your total income.
But what he's saying is that his CPA or whomever this is says he can only take a portion of it. Do you have some insight as to what perhaps his CPA is talking about?
No, I really don't, because if you put in $4,500, then he should be assuming his income is from his business is at least $4,500, he should then be able to take that whole $4,500.
Either Jason or Sarah, you know, I think, Luis, if I may suggest to you, I think it would be a good idea if you got a second opinion. I'm a great believer in people, if you have questions like this and it doesn't make sense to you, taking advantage, spending a little more money, which would be probably also if you went to see a different CPA, or if you went to see a tax certified specialist through the California Board of Legal Specialization, I think the payment you would make for this kind of advice would probably be also a business expense and deductible. David, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, that's correct.
Yeah.
At least it would be an itemizable deductions, miscellaneous.
Yeah. So, Luis, let me give you a couple of references here that may be helpful. If you want to get another opinion from a CPA, you can contact the California Society of CPAs, www.cal.com. cpa.org, or you can go to the California Board of Legal Specialization website, www.calbar.ca.gov. And then to the left of your computer screen, you can go to Legal Specialists and look for a taxation specialist in your geographic area and make an initial appointment to discuss this, because it seems to me it's pretty significant that you want to get this clarified. So good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. Our number again is 1-415-841-4134. If you want to speak to my guests on the air, if you want to speak to any of the CPAs off the air, 1-800-525-9917. Do we have someone else on the air that, pardon me, who's waiting to be on the air? I guess, oh, yeah, Peter. Yes, welcome. Sure. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes, good evening. Hi. Hopefully my voice comes through the phone.
Your voice is fine.
I have a question. I haven't paid income tax for maybe six years. What it is, I went as an outside employee and got a 1099 on my job in consulting so that I could help catch up during the economic downturn to pay the mortgages of my ex-partner. Well, and then we were going to catch up later. Then we separated. I got cancer in the last year and a half, went through radiation therapy. I'm on disability, a Social Security disability, and I have no income. But I want to make right at some time with Social Security. I'm 61 years old, but, you know, I'm going to do some bit of work. But, you know, I basically have no, you know, income or anything, and I'd probably, probably $40,000-$50,000 taxes I didn't pay.
Peter, let me clarify something. You said you want to make it right with Social Security. You meant right
no,
with the
IRS.
Yeah. Let me get some comments for you. Yours is a particularly obviously difficult situation for you. Let me get some comments from my guests.
They're not bothering me, but
yeah. Let me ask you to turn your radio back up and get some comments. Who would like to start on this one? Okay, Sarah will do this, Peter, because she is with through the Justice and Diversity Center of the San Francisco Bar. She is the supervising attorney of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic, and maybe the clinic can be of some help to you. It's Sarah Drinkwater. Sarah, please.
Yeah, so we frequently see this situation come up, and I think it would surprise people to find out that the IRS can, in fact, levy your Social Security benefits, including your disability benefits. So what the caller may be seeing is that he may be getting a levy notice saying, I'm going to have, or his benefits will be levied up to 15%. So I think it's great that he is wants to get on track. There are collection alternatives. So for someone in his situation, the IRS does have programs to deal with folks who may have a liability, but they're not able to pay. The Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic, this is sort of our bread and butter. This is what we do on a regular basis. Caller can go to irs.gov and look up the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic. There are four of us in the Bay Area. Or you can call our clinic directly. Our phone number is 415-782-8977. For someone who is low income, we can assist them with coming up with a collection alternative. The IRS has a Fresh Start Offer and Compromise program where, depending on income and assets and some other variables, the IRS will agree to settle. They may agree to settle for less than what's owed. And for someone in his situation where he's looking at a long-term disability and a fixed income, that may be the option for him as he goes. He files his tax returns, comes into compliance with the IRS, and then works with them to figure out an alternative to a levy and other actions.
Would your clinic be in a position to, he said he has filed no income tax returns, as I heard him, for 6 years.
Right.
Would your clinic be in a position to help him if he contacted you to help him put together these tax returns over the last 6 years?
Yeah, so there's he has a couple of options. Our clinic, we don't specialize in doing tax returns. We will do them in conjunction with a controversy. So if you are having problems with the IRS and the IRS says to you, you have to come into compliance in order to negotiate mm-hmm. with us, we can do returns in those situations. Mm-hmm. There are, for taxpayers, some other services out there. There's the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program through that's funded through the IRS. Unfortunately, most of them are closed right now until the filing season. They'll open back up at the end of January. Uh-huh. And there are some, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program can help taxpayers file previous year tax returns in some situations.
May I suggest this? Obviously, he has to start somewhere. You gave the phone number for your clinic, 415-782-8977. If he calls that, can he speak to someone at any length on the phone, or is that by him calling there, is that for him to make an appointment to come into your office, which obviously is at the San Francisco Bar Association on Battery Street in San Francisco? How does it physically, yeah. How does it work?
So our process is the first step with any taxpayer is to do an intake call where I would speak to them about what their situation was, whether it's likely a type of case that we could take mm-hmm. Or if perhaps they need a different sort of service. So the first step is always the intake call. It can be done over the phone. Much of the work can be done remotely through email, mail, or phone. So,
really? Okay.
You know, we are aware that, especially for low-income folks, it's not easy to get to someone's office between
sure.
the hours of 9 to 5. So we are happy to work with folks over the phone and through other procedures.
So if Peter calls mm-hmm. the 415-782-8977, should he ask for you, Sarah, or should he ask for someone to help him? I'm disabled. I have no income. I'm on disability. I'd like to talk with someone to see if your clinic can help me. How should he go about specifically doing this?
So my Jennifer's our program assistant. She generally does the screening, and then eventually he will make his way to me.
So he should ask for Jennifer.
That's right.
Poor Jennifer. Jennifer is going to be barraged with calls. Okay.
I would say he should really prepare his returns, because when the IRS prepares your tax returns for you, in the event that you don't file, mm-hmm. they do not give you any benefit of the doubt, and they really, it's all...
They sound like they're kind of hard-nosed.
Well,
is that right?
if the IRS prepares your return for you as a substitute return, it's going to be much higher than it would be if you prepared it.
Peter, make that call to Sarah Drinkwater's office, which is part of the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. 415, I hope you got it, 415-782-8977, and good luck to you. Patty, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi there, Chuck. I have been listening to you for a long time. I first wanted
you poor person. My God, you must be exhausted.
For years and years.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I feel sorry for you. Go ahead.
It's a really unusual program. I think it's great and good for KALW to do that. So, and thank you very much to all your many guests who donate their time. That's wonderful, too. I have what I think is a fairly straightforward question, although could be complicated. I have a daughter who is just graduated from college in Maryland
mm-hmm.
and has decided to stay out there.
Yeah.
And the whole time that she's been in college and for some years now I've been able to file as head of household.
Hmm.
I'm divorced, not remarried. And my ex and I have an arrangement where we, you know, claim her as a dependent on alternative years. But I've always been able to do head of household. So the question I have is, she's staying out there, I guess, technically no longer a resident in California for at least 6 months of the year or something really like that. Am I going to be able to claim her? Am I going to be able to file as head of household again,
okay,
or still,
all right,
while she still remains otherwise a dependent.
So with respect to her, you're claiming her as a dependent since you've filed as head of household. Has she actually physically spent any time in the last, let's say, year or two while she's been at college living in your house with you at all?
Oh, yeah. She has come home every summer, and then school's maybe a little unusual. They usually have 6 weeks off Christmas as well. So, yeah, so she's sleeping around quite a bit.
All right. Well, let me put your radio back up, if you would, Patty. Let me get some comments for you to see what might be your future. So thank you very much for calling.
All right. Thanks a lot.
David, what thoughts do you have on this?
Well, once a child is over 18, unless they are in school, you're not entitled to claim them as a dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they're actually living at home. And so I think she's probably going to lose, and it may be that she'd have enough of it for 2014 to claim what she wants in 14 as head of household and take the dependency, but she may not.
Mm-hmm.
And in which case she'll go back to a single person without the daughter as a dependent.
So in other words, even though the daughter has spent, it sounds like to me, the greater majority of her time living in Maryland while going to college, but still, because the daughter's back with her mother, with Patty at summertime and Christmas vacation, et cetera, that would be a legitimate basis for Patty in those periods of time to file as head of household. Is that right? And claim her daughter as a dependent?
Correct.
Okay. But now that she has graduated from college, if she does not continue, let's say, in graduate school, Patty has lost this opportunity to file as head of household. Is that right?
Well, you're also limited by age 23.
Oh, okay. So if her daughter is age 23 or older, that ends it.
Yeah, unless she's living at home.
Unless she's living at home. Well, Maryland is a long way to commute every day. So there you are, Patty. Good luck to you and your daughter. Any other comments with respect to Patty? Okay. We have just a few minutes left. And by the way, I want to invite you again, everyone, if you want to speak to any one of our three CPAs, who I want to thank again. The number is 1-800-525-9917. They are Larry Pond, Evan Stevens, and Stephen Graves, who are here for your benefit. 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank them very much, members of the California Society of CPAs. And ending comments? We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left of the program. David, what ending comments do you have for people in terms of trying to think intelligently about what they might do before the end of the year to maybe improve their situation on their 2014 tax return?
Well, yeah, I'd go back to what I said initially, and that is get your records in order so that you have good data to work from, and then get some help if you can't do it yourself in terms of figuring a strategy. If it's something that can be done.
Jason, what comments do you have?
I think just trailing on that, you can't expect your tax preparer, your CPA, to read your mind. You need to be able to give them the information they need to be able to figure out the best tax position for you to take. So if that information is not there, if the record keeping is not good, then their CPA is not going to know how to treat a certain item to the best advantage for you.
Let me come back to all of you on this in just a moment, but I need to tell you that support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. 1-800-259-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. That's 650-369-4149. What they'll do is they'll find someone for you who has experience in the area of your legal problem, set you up for a half an hour consultation. And throughout California, by the way, for a half an hour consultation, the basic fee that you will pay that doesn't go to the lawyer, it goes to the lawyer referral service, is somewhere between $25 to $35. And this is as to all counties throughout California. Every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service, and that's what is available to you. David, let me come back to you for a moment. You're talking about getting your documents, putting them in order so that they are there for you to work with your tax preparer, whoever that may be. Does that mean if you have paid for medical bills by check, if you have paid by credit card, does that mean that you want to take all of those checks that you have issued during the last year and bring them all together and have them in a bundle so that you know where they are if the IRS wants to challenge you?
Absolutely. That's imperative.
Oh, boy.
You don't need to bring them to your planner. You just need a total so that the planner has something to work from. But for purposes of if you are ever audited, you do need to have all that data together and keep it together. And, you know, general rules, the IRS has 3 years after filing to audit you, and the California has 4 years. So you're really looking at keeping records for a minimum of 5 years for anything that you've used for a tax deduction.
So certainly don't discard your checks. Don't get rid of your credit card statements. Don't shred this stuff. Put it somewhere that where you know it is, and you can get your hands on it if you're unlucky enough to be audited either by the IRS or the state of California. We have now, I guess, about a minute or two left. Any further final thoughts that you might have? Anyone?
Well, I'd like just to add
Jason,
to what David was saying. A lot of CPAs will give their clients organizers, tax organizers. It's really important if that's something your CPA gives you that you fill it out completely. And it goes along with what we're saying about keeping adequate records and giving as much information to your tax preparer as possible. So a lot of people don't fill out them all the way or skim through them. They really need to answer those as best as they can.
Sarah, you have the last 30 seconds.
I would just add that when April 15th of 2015 rolls around, make sure you file those returns. Even if you owe a debt you can't pay, get that return filed so you don't get stuck with a penalty for failure.
Terrific, terrific advice. I want to thank all three of you. David Hellman, great to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Chuck.
Terrific to have you. Sarah Drinkwater, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being with us. And Jason Gallick. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chuck.
Great to have you on the program. Next week, everybody, we're going to be talking about stopping workplace harassment because of race, national origin, and religion. My guests will be employment law attorneys Phil Horowitz and Maribel Hernandez. It's also going to be Call a Lawyer Night, and you might want to talk and speak with an attorney off the air, 1-800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The program is also funded by the Trusts and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. Join us next week. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.